This episode in the AI Survival Guide uses workplace and organizational psychology to help you understand how your personality drives your reactions at work and at home. But we're here to talk about work, so you don't get outperformed by more emotionally intelligent peers or AI, or a combination of them both. So I'm joined by Carl Hebenstreit. He is a PhD level executive coach and an award-winning author with over 25 years experience using the Enneagram, which you're going to find out all about, and organizational psychology to help leaders and teams exceed their goals. So I think, I mean, first of all, thank you for joining me. Really appreciate it.
And well, thank you for having me here, Nate. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
I've been talking about this for a long time, right? About how we're all completely conditioned by our environments, our upbringing, the color of our skin, the location, the weather, where we, you know, everything in our lives could be a word that we just heard this morning, right? Or a conversation that we heard on the television, or some sort of bad programming that we kind of picked up when we were at school, or our parents did to us.
Yeah.
And I'm a big believer in like taking responsibility for that.
I like to say the golden rule is probably one of the biggest challenges that we have to overcome, the hurdles, because the golden rule, everyone agrees that the golden rule is something that is good and right and we should abide by. And the golden rule, of course, is treat others the way that you want to be treated, which would work if everyone were the same. And if every single situation were the same, and if all the values were the same, and the politics were the same, the ideologies were the same, but we're not all the same. We're very different people from all over the world. And even if we're part of the same city or state, we're so different within those neighborhoods too. So the reality is letting go of that, because it's been so ingrained in us and so taught to us in religion and school and commercials on TV that tell us golden rule, golden rule, golden rule. And the reality is, let's step out of that, because that's very self-referencing. And we really need to figure out what is going on with other people and what other information, perspectives, values, ideologies, strengths that they have that we can also integrate into our own worldview to expand that, to become, as you were saying earlier, more emotionally intelligent, so that we have empathy for all those other perspectives as well. That's the platinum rule. Treat others the way that they want to be treated. What's going on for them?
Wow. It's literally a lifetime study, right? And you've been studying this for 25 years. And
or more.
More, right. And so applying this in life is golden, right? Because then...
Or platinum.
It's kind of like... It's not... What's that called?
Or platinum.
Right. So you're kind of combining motivations that people have, yes, right? Because obviously in every situation, everyone has a motivation to do something, right? So you're combining the motivations that they have with the way that they're conditioned. Right. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that we have these programs that are running in the background and that can sit there and self-sabotage us. Right. And this obviously occurs because it's a huge topic, the self-sabotage. So, how would you go about it then? If someone is like sitting there and they're really struggling and they want to kind of improve their life, improve their career, and improve the organization that they're working for, but they feel like they're going backwards. Like, what advice would you sort of say to obviously get a coach, right? But actually, they can do some work on their own, can't they? Before maybe they get a coach. So is it like you need to be sort of aware of the stories that you're kind of telling yourself? Is that kind of a good place to start?
Starting with self as instrument is always the first place to start. It is self-awareness is key. Either Aristotle or Socrates said, knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom. And we're not going to know who said it first because we, you know, that was a long time ago and they're both dead at this point. So we can't ask them. Plus it was in Greek. So anyway, that was the translation. Knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom. So if you take that self-awareness part, which if you think about it is the golden rule, knowing how I think, what my values are, what my perspectives are, what my strengths are, what my likes and dislikes are, that is the first step. Then realizing that not everyone else has those same perspectives, values, strengths, ideologies, gifts, whatever it is that you want to call it, or motivations. So we all have different motivations, but we assume that other people are like us, that they have the same motivations that we do because we were never taught that they might have different motivations or perspectives. And so actually taking that next step, so starting with self first and then empathizing to the other conditions is the next step that needs to happen for not only your own personal growth, but also your success in any relationship, whether it's personal or organizational work relationships. So it's really figuring out, first of all, admitting to yourself, you don't have all the answers. Not one person does not have all the answers. There is no way that one person can know everything. Other people have answers. Other people have different ways of seeing things. And we need to tap into that, to listen more, to be more curious, genuinely, authentically curious to find out what's really going on, what else is going on, and get as many perspectives as possible because we don't want to surround ourselves with people that have our perspective only. We've seen that dangerous, horrible things can happen with that when we have groupthink and then we don't consider other situations, dangers, perspectives, instances that could come into play, and we don't plan for those. And then we have disasters like space shuttle explosions and things like that. So we want to have as much diversity of perspective around us as possible so we can draw for that. Even if it's not something that we can easily access within us, getting it from other people too.
AI is rewriting the rules of business. For non-technical leaders, the risk of becoming obsolete is real. You don't need to panic and you don't need to learn how to code. Influential Visions shows you exactly how to stay irreplaceable when AI can replace pretty much anyone else. No complex theory, just proven strategies. Start your $1 trial to Monday Influencer at the link below. Your competitive advantage starts now.
So what is an Enneagram and how can it help an organization to lead better and retain staff for longer and lower recruitment costs and have better teamwork and all these amazing things? So what is it and how does it kind of do that?
Yeah. So first of all, I want to say that I've been in the human resources and leadership development, organization development industries for, as you said, over 25 years. And over 30 years, but with 25 sounds better. So we'll stick with 25. So I've seen and been certified and performed and conducted all the instruments, Myers-Briggs and DISC and Hogan and Leadership Circle and just everything and Strengths Finder. So everything. And they're all good for what they do and they serve a purpose for what it is. And it's great for a certain readiness that you're working with an organization. And they're all about behaviors. They're not really getting into the why, the motivation behind those behaviors. So it's great to know what behaviors you're going to expect from someone, but you have no idea why. And two different people may be showing the same exact behaviors, but for totally different motivations. So figuring out what's really going on and understanding them and what's important to them and what their values are is huge. Because as you said, in organizations, we want to understand people better, to understand where they're coming from, how we can motivate them, how we can engage them, how we can make them and help them be happy and productive in the organization. And we want that diversity of all the different motivations because we want those perspectives to be able to produce the best possible innovative results. Because the world is different. All our customers, all organizations have customers of some sort. And all these customers have different motivations. And we want to be able to meet those needs and motivations. And so we need to be having those same exact diversity of motivations in our organizations to be able to understand our customers better as well. So the Enneagram is a system that is about identifying nine core motivations that all human beings have. We all have one core motivation that we keep with us for our entire life. And the easiest way to describe these nine without having it be something that, again, your eyes glaze over, is to look at them in three sets of three, because they each reside within three of our different body centers. So we have three different ones that apply to thinking or our head style or thinking style. We have three that apply to our feeling or heart style, how we feel, how we access our heart, and three that relate to how we take action or body or gut style. So if you want to play along with me, you might be able to figure out what your three of them are. And then after you've picked your three, the one style for each of your thinking, your feeling, and your action, one of those is also going to correlate with your core motivation. So are you up to this? All right.
Yeah. Of course.
All right. So let's start with the, we'll start with the head. How's that? So those are the fives, the sixes, and the sevens. That don't think of them. There's no, it's just a nominal scale. It's just, we can call them red, blue, green, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's five, six, and seven. But that's probably the simplest way of thinking about how do you access your thinking. So there are people out there who normally access their thinking or their head by being very objective. They want all the information. They want every single bit of data and information. They want to collect it all. And they want to create systems and frameworks that make sense of all that data. They want it to make sense, and they want it to be able to predict what's most likely to happen in the future. And their goal is to not look foolish. They want to be prepared so they don't look foolish. They want to be wise. So they're driven by that search for wisdom and knowing everything so they don't look foolish. They can be experts in a certain area. Mm-hmm. Then there are two variations of that, if you want to look at it that way. Then there are also people that are, yes, all about information, but it's all about building some sort of a backup plan, a contingency plan to be able to survive and thrive, to be able to be comfortable, secure, and survive. So they're looking at the worst case scenario. So the five was much more objective, and these are the observers or analysts or quiet specialists. All the objective information, the good and the bad, and coming up with the system. The sixes are the loyal skeptics. They're always questioning. They're always saying, what could go wrong? Where's the danger? How can I prepare for that to be safe, comfortable, and secure? Not necessarily to not look foolish, but to be safe, comfortable, and secure. So that's the difference between the five and the six. The six is always going to look at the worst case scenario. Five is more objective. Then we have our sevens, who are epicures or adventurers. And they're all about, they're visionary, and all about the good thing that could happen, the positive that can happen, the connections, the possibilities, the options, the opportunities. How do we take advantage of those? So very grand scale, very visionary, very future oriented, and downplaying the negative stuff. Always favoring.
You knew I was a seven anyway. You knew I was a seven anyway, just from talking to me, you could tell probably. But
you know, but we are not allowed to do that. It's up to the person to come up with the type that they are. Yes.
Over the years, I'm definitely a seven, right? I'm 98% a seven. But as I've got older and wiser, and I've got access to lots of data and lots of experience, right? Wisdom from years of struggling as a self-employed individual, right? Right, and being in business, my father's business, and lots of other experiences, and traveling, and all sorts of difficult situations, I've become a lot closer to the five, right? But I'm definitely seven.
Yep.
But now I like to be more five, but I'm still a seven, and I can't really get away from that, because it's definitely who I am. Like, I'm a total adventurer. Absolutely. Yeah.
Of course. Look at all your world travels and all your moves across the globe, right?
Totally.
So if indeed you resonate with seven as your core thinking style, which may or may not be your core motivation. And the core motivation for the seven is to not be locked in, to be able to have the freedom to take advantage of all these opportunities.
That's a difficult,
right?
That's a difficult one.
Yeah. But there's also
There's
a line that goes that attaches the seven to the five. So the seven goes to five when they're in their comfort zone. So yes, we have all nine of these types within us to a certain extent, yet we have preferences for some of them, and one of them is our core motivation. And the goal, of course, is to integrate and balance all of these so that we can access them as necessary, so that we're not always looking at it through the same perspective. It's all whatever's right for the situation and whatever's best to give us the full 360 view of what's going on.
If you could see my brain, yeah, you would have just seen the whole top of it just go like this, right?
Yeah.
Because what I like about this is it's so simple, right? But yet it's so profound, and yeah, it's probably very rarely done, I would think. Yeah.
Luckily, it's getting more popular in organizations because they're seeing the value. They're seeing the results as people start to understand where each of their coworkers and their team members is coming from and what they need, and understand the value that these different perspectives can bring. We're seeing, I've done case studies where we see that the return on the investment is huge. It's they're tripling their almost doubling. There's one organization where it almost doubled revenue year over year over year over year for 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Because wow, the leaders went through the program and they started engaging their team members in a much more different and inclusive way.
Right.
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 And understanding right, and including them and democratizing that whole system, that whole plan, that whole purpose.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So we talked about the thinking styles. And that, okay, that blew your mind.
That's kind of, yeah. I'm letting that settle in a bit now. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. So let me, maybe we'll take a little detour. So if indeed you lead with seven, because you seem to resonate with seven a lot. So we said that there's a line that goes from seven to five. All sevens have this line that goes to five, where they're in their comfort zone, where they're, when they are in their happy place, they're much more detached and less, I need to do everything and jump into everything and I fear of missing out. But they're able to actually observe, right?
Right.
In their stress point, sevens go to type one, which is part of the action center. And the one is perfectionistic and rigid, right? And they're all about doing the right thing. So when they take action, through the lens of what's the appropriate thing to do in this situation because of our ethics or our values, so that we know what's the right thing to do. So it may not be an immediate action, but it has to go through that rubric of what's the right thing to do based on our values, our ethics, and our morals, right? Mm-hmm. But the one stresses out the seven because the one puts all these limits and rules and laws. And the seven is, I don't want to be closed in. I don't want to shut down. So whenever you see a seven be much more micromanaging and detail-oriented, they're probably in their one zone because they're stressed out about something. Maybe there's a deadline that's looming. Maybe there's a constraint that's been put on them, and they get much more rigid and less laissez-faire.
Wow.
So that's if your core motivation is the type seven.
Right. So mm-hmm. So with AI as tools, which is what we're trying to help people with, right? Because mm-hmm. we talked about this before, like we know people use it, you know, Microsoft CEO said, if you're not using AI, you want to be a Luddite, you need to leave the organization now. Yeah. You told me about people that are training their teams already and making everybody
entire 100,000 employee organizations every single person has to be trained in AI. Yes.
Yeah. And then you've got Walmart that have said they're not going to lay anybody off, I think they said for 4 years or 5 years. But what we're going to do is we're going to make everybody use ChatGPT, right? So mm-hmm. So you think about the innovation that will come from 4 yeah. million employees using that. Like,
hopefully.
Yeah. I'm actually quite positive about the future. I think that these mm-hmm. trailblazing organizations and people are going to make massive differences. So yeah. in terms of the personality type that I have, right? And
if that is your type, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and having to, I think it is, and yeah. having to take action, I can use AI to help me to find all the information so that it can help me to make decisions, so that it can help me to take action and not be frozen. Yes. Because we all get yeah. paralyzed by yeah. stress, right? Like this is right. a big, big thing. And we make the choice. Are we going to do anything or are we going to do nothing, right? And, yeah. And I think having AI there for me as an individual and part of a very small team, I can use AI to do things and give me the information that I need so I can actually make decisions and then take action, right? So it's going to be really interesting. Yeah,
that would be fascinating to actually do. How can AI help each Enneagram type, each motivation? So for the sevens can use AI to help build some sort of structure in place so they don't feel that they're stressed at the end, right? They can still have the ability to have all these expansive thoughts and brainstorming and do all these different things. However, AI organizes things for them and reminds them and says, yes, and do this, otherwise you're going to be stressed. So let's prevent that stress from the beginning, right? So, and as you said, people can become immobile with indecisiveness because of whatever reason. And it's sometimes due to their personality type and the motivation. So for the sevens, it's just, there's too much and they may not want to commit to something or make a decision, because if they commit to something, then they've given up this other stuff that could be better, right? If I commit to this, then I'm giving this up, or something else might even come in later that might even be better. And I haven't committed. And I've already committed to this, and then I won't be able to take advantage of that. For our type nines, if we're going to go back to the action center, so we talked about one, making decisions and taking action based on values and morals and ethics. Our type nines are going to be less decisive, or going to seem less decisive, because they're sitting there looking at the whole system and the whole, how everything fits together, and the interplay of everything and the interdependence of everything and how everything is connected. And if you make a decision, you're going to impact this other thing over here, which could create conflict, which they don't want. So their thing is, let's avoid conflict at all costs. We want peace and harmony. So they'd rather not make a decision and keep the state of equilibrium rather than do something that will cause conflict. So that's the nine as an action style. And then the eight as an action style is immediate action. And if it's the wrong action, we'll fix it. It's okay. But at least we've taken action. And it's usually action for others.
I'm a bit of two. Yeah.
But that's the action style, right? So between eight, nine, and one, what is your action style between eight, nine, and one?
Wow. But do we all have different action styles on different days?
And, hopefully.
And hopefully. Right. Sorry, I know it's a dumb question there, but I thought...
It's not a dumb question, because some people don't. Some people stick with the same action style all the time. But the goal is to make sure you're using the action style that's appropriate to the situation, to the day.
Wow. Sorry, carry on. Sorry to interrupt you there.
No, that's where people get into conflict with each other or trouble, because they're like, why isn't this person taking action? They don't care about this project. They don't care about the company. No, they're looking at it through a totally different lens and actually caring more about it, because they're looking at all these other perspectives and linkages that you may not be looking at, right? So they're not wrong. It's just something else that needs to be added into the equation to make sure you're taking the perfect action or the right action.
Wow.
It's just a different way of taking action. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, one may be more appropriate in a situation. For an example, in a crisis situation, you may not have time to put things through the ethics filter or the let's look at all the linkages. You may have to say, like, there's a fire in the other room because of the power outage. Get out. We're not going to do a consensus. We're not going to do democratic decision making. Here is immediate action. Let's do it. We're not doing the other two styles. So it's really situationally dependent. How do we access? And we have all those within us. We just need to access them and make sure that we're not only relying on one of them all the time.
So so how many different ones? I'm a bit confused. How many different ones are there for each?
Three motivations or energies, if you want to look at it as energies or perspectives for each center, body center. So three for the head, three for the heart, three for the gut. So we've already done the three head ones, and you said you preferred the seven. I think you said a slight preference for the seven for you. We talked about the action, eight, nine, and one. Eight was immediate action, and those are called the bosses, protectors, generals, directors, things along those lines, or active controllers. And they're the ones that immediately take action, usually through others, executing through others. The nines are the peacemakers or harmony seekers, and they're looking at, let's look at the whole situation first. Let's not take action too quickly, because we could cause some conflict. And then the ones are, let's take action, but let's put it through our value structure first, our ethics, our morals. And the ones are the perfectionists or reformers or strict perfectionists. Yeah. And other in different schools call them different names. So that was so we talked about the head types and we talked about the action or gut types or body types. And now we didn't talk about the heart types yet. So yeah, I think did you select the type 8 for yourself in that one? The immediate action?
No, I don't know about the heart types. Can you explain about that?
No, in the action, did you select type 8 for the immediate action or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Most of the time I like to take immediate action, but then sometimes I'm going to delay because I don't have all the information. This is
exactly.
Or it doesn't quite feel right. I think that's a big one for me. If it doesn't feel right, then I like to pause and I like to reevaluate.
Right.
And then I like to sleep on it. And then I like to make a decision. And then if I can't make a decision, then I don't make a decision and I wait until I get more information and I gather more information and then I make a decision.
Okay. So that could be a little bit on the 9 in there too then. That makes sense.
Wow. Yeah.
Because remember, we have all 9 types within us. All right, good. Okay, so let's get to the heart center. So the heart is the types 2, 3, and 4. So the 2s are accessing their heart through an intuitive lens because they're intuitively externalizing their focus, looking at what other people's needs are, not necessarily focusing on their own needs. I mean, their needs are from a perspective of, I want to be loved and I'm going to get loved by being helpful and giving to other people. So that's the external focus is helping other people's will make me feel needed and loved. They're going to love me and need me. And therefore, those needs are being met that way. Mm-hmm. So that's the helper or giver, the type 2. The type 3 is more, feelings are great and all, but we got to get things done. So let's put them aside. We'll deal with them later. Let's get our goals done first. Right? And their core motivation at that point is they want to be seen as being the best at whatever it is they want to be the best at, the best CEO, the best planner, the best parent, the best coach, whatever it is. And the type 4s are, and by the way, the 3s are the performers or achievers. And the type 4s are more about the romantics, the artists, the creatives, intense creatives. And they're all about feeling all the feelings. They're very empathic. They feel your feelings. They feel their feelings. They live in feelings. They feel, therefore they are.
You've explained what the Enneagram is all about.
Right.
Why is it different and better than other instruments that are out there?
It's deeper. It goes deeper. And we just scratched the surface in our conversation today because there are also things that are called subtypes, which are formed based on instincts. And we're not going to go there. That's just a lot more. However,
No, we're not going there.
The other instruments are based on behaviors. They're just describing the behaviors that we are expecting to see of ourselves and our coworkers. But we don't know why. Why are they exhibiting these behaviors? Why is this person an extrovert? Why is this person sensing and wanting all the details? Why is this person making decisions based on values and not logic? Why is this person really oriented towards time and structure versus free thinking and free flowing? We don't know why. So once we understand the why, we understand why people are motivated or wired the way that they're wired. And we can also see some of the behaviors that will be a result of that. But we also then understand when they do something, we can look back and say, oh, that's right, because this is what they need. This is what they're motivated by. They're not doing this to hurt me or to be evil or to sabotage my career. They're looking at it through a different lens. And this is their motivation and need. And so I can now understand someone better, where they're coming from, understand why they did what they did, and not put my own interpretation of, well, this is why I would have done it. They didn't do it this way. Therefore, they're trying to hurt me or sabotage me or whatever. So the other systems don't do that.
Wow. That's really deep. That's really deep. It gives such a broad understanding of people. This is like gold, platinum. Right. It really is. Because
and we didn't even get into rhodium yet. Rhodium is even better because it's when you integrate.
But once you, because it's like you're getting like an eagle eye view, aren't you? Of all, Once you understand all these things, you get this view. But some people don't have the time. Some people are never going to dig into this to such a level. They're just not, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why they need people like you to sort of help them within the organization, right? So you've explained a bit about why it's so difficult for people to change and get along. Is there anything else that you'd like to sort of add on that front?
So we only change when we're ready for change. And the readiness is basically a formula, if you want to look at it that way. It's a formula of, if we think that we're in some sort of pain, there's a pain that we're experiencing, and we want to get rid of that pain, and we realize that, you know what, the pain isn't that great. I can live with it. It's fine. Because if I try to change, it's going to be very, even more painful. I don't want to deal with that. So then we continue going on. At some point, that pain will get more and more and more, and get bigger, and it'll start getting in the way of being successful, getting in the way of your relationships, getting in whatever it is. So when we then perceive that, okay, this pain has gotten bigger, and now I'm looking at what the pain or the cost of change is, and that's smaller, that's less than the current pain that I'm in, then I'm going to go through the process of going and changing my perspective, changing the way I'm looking at things. So that's ultimately what's going to help. And this is true for organizations. This is true of individuals. That's the formula that really takes place. So we're really trying to minimize our pain. And if we don't see the pain as that great, and we're just going to keep doing things what we're doing, and even if it harms relationships, we could be more effective, but it's just, we see that it's more difficult to change, we're not going to change. However, if things are so important to us, if things are important to us and they are being affected, and then the cost of change is then seen as less than the cost of staying the same, then that's where we're going to go and do that.
Wow. That's very profound. I like that a lot. It's very simply explained as well, which is really important, because we can often get lost. A lot of people explain things in a very difficult way to understand, because they make everything complex. But I like the way you make this sound very simple and explain it very well. So how does the Enneagram help people to change and get along and improve the businesses and lives as well?
So it goes back to what we were talking about a little earlier about the self-awareness. So it starts off with self-awareness, so you understand your own type, where you're coming from. And you can then start seeing, oh, these other people on my team also share my same motivation. Although we may have some differences because of instincts or subtypes or all that. And you can also see the other differences because they may have different thinking styles, feeling styles, and action styles from you, right? So you start seeing how the differences are important, how they're not detractors, but actually helping to create an understanding of the bigger picture when we start integrating all those other perspectives in there. And we see things that we didn't see before. We take into consideration things that we didn't know existed before. Or maybe they were within us so deep that we never paid attention to them. We never focused on them. But then when we see them in others, we can start saying, oh yeah, I have that too. You said that a little bit when we were talking about the heart center, when you went through all, you had a little bit of all three heart centers in you, more so than the other centers, right? You saw some similarity in the action center and the thinking center, but the heart center, you really had all three going on for you. Right. So other people will then start seeing how all of those are within them as well, and how they're available in other people. And you start seeing how important it is to have that diversity of perspective and motivation in order to be able to see what's really going on, in order to be able to make the best decision possible. In fact, I have a whole list of those nine types and the questions that you can look at to say, how do I get a better understanding of what's really going on right now to make the best decision in every single situation? And if you look at the energy and the essence behind each type, they can help you to see what's really going on in every single situation.
Fantastic. I think it's really, really interesting, to be honest. So you've pretty much explained how it can help increase emotional intelligence. Was there anything else that you want to sort of add on that front? Or
I think that if we each work on increasing our own emotional intelligence, if we take that as a personal goal, as a challenge, maybe for the new year, imagine if everyone did that, what a different type of world we would have. And I started thinking about that even because, you know, right now I'm working with executives and I'm working with organizations and people are already adults. Imagine if you could teach this to children earlier on in life, how different our lives would be right now if we had learned all about emotional intelligence and empathy and integrating all these other perspectives into our own. How much more intelligent and emotionally intelligent we would be, and what a different world it would be right now. We talked about AI having this big influence, but imagine that coupled with AI, what could be possible?
It's fascinating when you think about it.
Yeah.
It really is fascinating. It's a huge topic. I'm really pleased that you gave me just some bare bones so I can understand it. It's not too complicated right now. And I'm going to go away and I'm going to digest all of this. And
I see it's already happening. I see the wheels turning.
Yeah, I know. You can see me thinking, right? Yes. Because there's so much information there, but mm-hmm. it's so important. This is the point, right? It is literally, you know, I went to this workshop, right, probably about 10 years ago, this Millionaire Mind workshop with T. Harv Eker, if you've heard of that. And he wasn't even there, right?
Yeah.
However, it was really useful because it made me go over what was going on in my inner mind, right? Because what's in your inner world, it shows up in the outer world. And I think more people need to understand this, but the major problems in life is whilst this information is out there, there's also a lot of information that is not valuable, not helpful, very confusing, and it keeps people on this sort of hamster wheel,
right,
of going through life from one amazing piece of self-improvement information online to the next piece,
right,
just because it stops them from feeling the pain of the mistake that they've still been making, and they're not going to change because they feel better every time they watch it. And mm-hmm. and that's why what you just said here is really profound, really profound. Yeah.
It's definitely sustainable. This is a system that is sustainable. It's not a one and done like some of the other systems that are again, they have their place. And when people are ready for more, the Enneagram is really an in-depth way of getting to that.
Right. Well, I think it's fantastic. I'm so happy that you spent your time sharing this with me and for our listeners. And reach out to Carl to have him speak at your organization to help increase your individual, team, and organizational EQ and bottom line, because As you probably noticed, he really does know what he's talking about, and
I'm pretty passionate about it.
Yeah, well, I am. Your passion has rubbed off onto me, actually.
Good.
And I was just talking about that earlier about how, you know, if, for example, your English teacher encouraged you versus demotivated you, how much quicker it would be to you becoming more proficient in English or writing books, or, you know, it would make massive differences, right?
Absolutely.
And if this was applied to education, like you say, it would literally transform the world within 10 years, 15 years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the purpose of the children's book that I wrote. It's right there. Nina and the Really, Really Tough Decision. It was really meant to help children and the parents who are obviously reading this book to them, or if they're helping them with reading it, really understand all these differences and create that empathy. And it's in 5 different languages. So I'm trying to get it out all around the world.
Wow. So what age group sort of children is that book aimed at?
So ideally probably 9-10 year old, but there are so many really, really smart younger kids that could also, like, 5 years, 6 years old can do it. And of course, anything, continue going up into your 100, you can be 100 plus and still get something.
Oh, really? And you still get value from that if you're
absolutely
20 or whatever.
Absolutely. Because if you've never encountered the Enneagram, it's a really easy way of understanding, oh, this is what it's about. It's about differences in the way of looking at the world and interacting in the world. And how can I integrate all these into my own?
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
That was a spoiler alert. Sorry. Now you know what the book was about.
No, but that's exactly what people want, right? People need to know to make these decisions, yeah. Don't they? Mm-hmm. And thank you for listening, and thanks for spending the time.
Cheers. Well, thank you, Nate. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.